Claire Bowditch on ABC Radio Melbourne.
And this morning was a wonderful warm morning. It's still warm in the afternoon. We're going to be chatting sex now with Cindy Darnell. It's sexy time.
I've heard people
welcome,
say
Cindy. That. Thanks, darling. Almost the end of summer. Can you believe it? Still a lot of love in the air, though, isn't there?
There really is, and it's such a great day today.
I don't know about that.
It's the smoothest voice, Cindy.
Who does?
You do.
Oh, I thought you meant Barry.
Well, Barry does, too. Just enjoying this moment of... See, Barry's going to do something now that we all need to do in our relationships. He's just going to pick it up, isn't he?
Here he goes.
What's going on there, Barry? Cindy Darnell is a sex therapist, one of Australia's best known. She joins us on afternoons to discuss sexy time. We're talking about you and your love lives. And Cindy, we thought we'd concentrate on something that affects a lot of people today.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So we're going to be talking about getting it on when you haven't for a while.
Yeah. No, oh, it just ended like that. And that's how it can end sometimes.
It really can.
You're with someone for a while, just set the scene. You're with someone for a while. You've connected very strongly, perhaps at the beginning of your relationship, mm-hmm. but then perhaps some time has gone on.
Yep.
And you just don't feel it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
What do you call
mm-hmm.
that?
Well, you just call that life. I know. But the thing is, a lot of folks panic at that point, and they start, you know, often because culturally we are taught to associate love and sex as being the same thing.
Mm.
And the reality is, for a lot of people, they're complementary, but they're not actually the same thing, insofar as we can love people with all of our heart and not necessarily want to shag them.
Yeah.
And we can have really lusty thoughts for somebody that we met 5 minutes ago. So, you know, these things happen. So this whole love sex thing can be a bit of a dichotomy. So what I'm getting at is that when sex goes south in a longer term relationship, it doesn't mean that it's the end of the relationship. And a lot of people sometimes interpret that as, oh my goodness, maybe I don't love my partner anymore.
Mm.
And, you know, that may be the case, but that's a separate whole other thing. So one of the big things I want to reassure people is that, you know, the love sex thing is not an indication that there's necessarily a problem in the relationship. There might be, but there really might not be.
Cindy, you're a sex therapist. I'm going to ask you some very specific questions in a moment about the period of time within which we should start to worry, circumstances around which it would be unusual for us to... you know, to not be looking at it as a problem and so on. But
mm-hmm.
I wanted to share with our listeners first a story that I remember reading in my 20s. It was by a chap, I think, called Robert Johnson. He wrote a series of books called He, She and We.
Right.
And one of these books, he spoke about a Jungian metaphor. He said that when we first fall in love, it is like having 10,000 volts flow through our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
This is the limerence stage of love.
Mm-hmm.
Our hormones are elevated
yeah.
and our connections in the world seem brighter and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But a long-term relationship means learning to live at a more manageable 1,000 watts. Because
yes.
if you live at 10,000 the whole time, you're actually going to fry your sockets.
Yeah. And it's unsustainable. You know, we cannot... maintain that level of enthusiasm to that degree long term, especially if it's a live-in partnership that starts to involve family members, whether that's children or, you know,
parents.
And aunts and uncles and extended
families of animals.
Animals, all those sorts of things,
other things to take care
of. Yeah, because life happens, you know, that's what John Lennon said, life's what happens when you're busy making other plans. And this is true of sex as well. I'm not sure that John Lennon was referring to shagging, but, you know.
But you made a very good point. We think that our sex life should be like Yoko and John all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these two people who seemed connected, they were happy to have press conferences
yeah.
in the nude, in their bed. They were very free and connected
yeah.
to their sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
For many of us, it's just hard enough to remember to get the mincemeat out of the freezer in the morning
sure.
for the chop suey later on in the night, let alone, you know, and get the kids down when they're up
yes.
and out of the bed and you're back in and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who are struggling, at what point should you think, Like, is there a week, you know, there are this many weeks in between the last time we had sex, or this many months, or for some people years? Like, at what point do you start to worry?
Look, it really depends on the people involved. There is not a set normal amount of times that you should or shouldn't be having sex in a year, for example. Some couples, for them, it's fundamentally important that it happens once a week, twice a week even, for some. For others, once a fortnight or once a month is fine. For others, a few times a year is okay. And it really, really, really depends on the couples involved. It's also because there's lots of different things that we need to take into account. Health, you know, for some people, if their mobility and their health changes, if they've got, you know, even respiratory problems, brain problems.
Or cancers.
Cancers, or, you know, any kind of. Like arthritis in hands and feet and ankles and bendy bits. All of this stuff, even though we think it's not necessarily directly related to sex, it affects your sex life. So if you're not doing it once or twice a week and you also happen to have other responsibilities, pets, kids, you know, families, it's not, again, it's not the end of the world. So I'm very reluctant to say you should be doing it, you know, what a percentage of how much of your month is.
That's a very reassuring thing for people to hear too. Speaking of reassurance, we're very lucky because we open the phone lines for this segment. It's not something that many afternoon shows do, but we believe that life in the afternoon allows for consideration of more intimate topics. And if you'd like to ask a question about how to keep the spark in your bedroom or share a comment for your adventure of doing so, we would love to hear from you. Give us a call. 1300 222 774 is the number to call. Don't be shy. Or SMS 0437 774 774. If you've got a question for sex therapist Cindy Darnell or for me, I'm not sure what I could offer you, Claire Bonici, mother of three, but, you know, I'll do my very best. We'd love to hear from you. Also, if you are someone who can sort of brag about being quite proactive about this, how is it that you've kept the flames of passion burning in your longer term relationship or in the midst of all the domesticity about it? 1300 222 774 is the number to call, or text us if you're feeling shy. 0437 774 774. Cindy, what do you do when you have two people who respect and love each other very, very much and are intimately connected, perhaps through, you know, the length of time they've been together? They might own some property together. They might have children together or pets. But one partner wants a lot more sex than the other partner. And, you know, there's the shame that on one partner's behalf because they want so much, and there's a bit of horror from the others because they just want to be left alone. How do you negotiate that situation?
Yeah, look, that is a delicate situation. It's also an incredibly common situation. So, again, it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's not anyone's fault. The common misconception is that it's maybe the person with the lower libido is the one who has the problem. I don't necessarily think that's true. I don't also think that the person with the higher libido has a problem either. It's just, you know, some of us like broccoli, others like, you know, meat pies. It's just how it is. So it's really about having conversations. And those conversations involve recognizing each other's needs and opening up the possibilities around what's going to be acceptable and not acceptable. So there are many ways of managing this. And again, there's no surefire formula on how do you fix this. But having conversations about what's important to you, having conversations about how much effort and energy you're willing to put in or not put in, where your hard limits are, what are you going to say no to, what's not okay for you in this relationship regarding compromise. If for the person who doesn't want to have sex as much as the other one, is it because possibly the quality of the sex has dropped? And it might be a quality conversation that needs to happen.
Like, so they used to be a 6 out of 10 and now it's just down to 4. I mean, when you
for
say,
example,
how do you measure that? Is it the feeling that you get in that experience or the level of connection? It just doesn't feel the same?
Look, it really, again, it depends. It could be about the connection, and but it can also really be that if it's literally just a matter of, you know, you have a shower, night, you get into bed, someone rolls on top of someone else, and there's no kind of intimacy, and there's no connection, yeah, you know. And it doesn't all have to be candlelight and, you know, soft music, but
it doesn't hurt though.
Just going on to, you know, autopilot sex can be a bit of a death knell for people's sex lives. So bringing your attention to what you're doing, regardless of who's on top, is really important.
In the chair is Cindy Darnell. She's one of Australia's leading sex therapists. She comes in regularly for this Sexy Time segment where we talk about some of the domestic ins and outs of a real life sexual relationship. Cindy, you might also know her from Lukewarm Sex, that absolute rip-snorter of a six-part series on the ABC last year where comedian Luke McGregor talked about the fact that he'd never had an intimate sexual relationship that was satisfying to him, and he confronted it with comedy and so on. So while we've got Cindy in the chair, give us a buzz. I'll get to your calls in a moment. If you have a question about sexuality, particularly within your relationship itself today, I'd love to hear from you. 1300 222 774. If you're feeling shy, you can put on a funny voice, or you can SMS through 0437 774 774 for this opportunity to chat with Cindy Darnell and myself about sex. Cindy, here is a reflection from one of our texters. Married men, many of them, just give up after multiple rejections. That can be upsetting.
Yeah.
What's your comment to someone like that? Fair enough.
It really depends. What is the rejection based upon? So if it is because of a technical problem, so meaning that it's a technique thing, that perhaps what used to be acceptable kind of sexual activities no longer are enjoyable and pleasurable, that perhaps changing the activities on the menu. So for a lot of, in a heterosexual context, for example, a lot of women don't especially enjoy intercourse. They don't hate it necessarily, but it's generally not the thing that is going to light their fire, as it were. And so in that situation, when for heterosexual couples, the default tends to be penis in vagina intercourse as the main event, that for a lot of heterosexual women can be really off-putting. So it could be that the couple just don't have the vocabulary to say, I don't want that kind of sex, but I'd like a different kind of sex. If they don't realize that they have that option, that could be part of what the rejection is about. Just as without talking to the caller, it could be that.
Text through on that very point. It's from Sad Mum. I don't want to call in because I'll probably cry. She says, my husband gets upset and cross because he feels we don't have sex enough. I don't feel that he puts any effort into our relationship. The last time we went out for dinner was a year ago when his mum told him to take me out. Now, how do I make him want to put effort into our relationship? I have stopped organising dinners and movie nights because it got old, me always organising.
Look, that's really, really difficult. I mean, there's only so much you can do. There's only so much you can only ask so many times that if you're not being heard and that you're not being acknowledged, it may be time to seek professional assistance insofar as that support can be really helpful to reframe the conversation and to recognize that relationships are alive. You know, they're not static, they're not monoliths. And if you don't take care of a relationship in the same way that you take care of a plant or a pet, it needs tending, it needs nourishment, it needs water to keep it alive. Relationships die.
Just remember ET, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly.
Many, many texts to get through, but I will go to a call now. David from Melbourne, you had a question for Cindy Darnell.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just interested to ask about pornography and the effects that has on an intimate relationship, and also whether it becomes an addiction and an addiction that becomes difficult to get away from.
Good question, David. A lot of people have a similar question, actually. Cindy.
So look, pornography, it depends on what kind, David, I guess. If it's pornography that again, like if we're looking at it through a heterosexual lens, if it's porn that is maybe chosen by the female partner, that can often be a helpful way to include porn in a relationship, because women can feel intimidated by porn for a variety of reasons, which are long and robust. So if it is about including porn in a relationship, I would really encourage heterosexual couples to let the women lead that part of the activity, or to at least check in with what kinds of porn are okay and which kinds are not, because there's a huge selection, just like there's a huge selection of cinema. You know, you can have horror and comedy. There's so many different genres. The same applies to pornography. So that's that part. And when you're asking, can it be troublesome? Of course it can be troublesome, in the same way that sugar, you know, can be troublesome. It really is about how, about the way that you relate to the product.
Well, that's one part of it potentially being addictive, that it could be a process addiction like any of the others. Mm. But there's also that very real issue that we have around men's expectation of sex based on porn. If they're Absolutely. Learning as teenagers that this is how we treat women, this is what women want, and so on.
I agree.
That can become problematic. And
it can be really, really problematic, which is why we need to have much more comprehensive sex education, certainly in schools and through media outlets like this.
Thank you for your call, David. I've actually also got a call here on that very topic from Linda in Ballin. Linda, what's your question for Cindy?
Well, I've got teenage nieces who are just about to become sort of sexually active. They're in that teenage range, and I can see my brother's very, very straight-laced and not sort of guiding them, and I'm just wondering if Cindy has any recommendations of how I could broach the subject.
Yeah.
Thanks, Linda.
So thanks for calling, Linda. I think one of the most helpful things is to refer them often like to books and videos and websites, because sometimes, you know, talking to a direct family member can feel a bit icky for
the
kids.
Oh, it's awkward at the best of times, isn't it, Linda?
Yeah. So I know there's a great book coming out soon, particularly for girls, by an author, Australian author called Eva Sless, called The Teen Girl's Guide to Getting Off. There's also another great book called For Fox's Sake by Rowena Murray, both Australian books, both written with Australian values in mind. So I would encourage you to check out those books, and certainly resources online, my website. Websites like Scarlatine and bish.com.uk is also a great one.
And I'm just going to add to that list too, Linda. Of course, Kaz Cook, you know, it's sort of, she's been writing about teenagers for a long time. She's got a book called Girl Stuff, I think it is. Uh-huh. And again, that's there's a few different age groups. So I think there's two books. One's eight, you know, ages 8 to 12 perhaps, and then 13 onwards. But you know, to have a little peek and be able to have books on resource for them to look into, I think that's great.
Yeah.
Good on you for keeping an eye on them, Linda, too.
Yeah, I'm kind of the cool aunt in that they can talk to me.
Good.
That's why I thought if there was any recommendation that I could pass on to them, that
would
be
No, that's
wonderful.
Great. I'm the cool aunt as well, so it's nice to connect with you.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Linda. A beautiful question here. Important question too, I think, because cancer touches so many of our lives, and we don't often think about how that also affects our sexuality. Because we don't just turn around and become a non-sexual being, you know. This question says that. It says, I'm a cancer patient who's had all testosterone blocked as part of treatment for the rest of my life. It's a very tough gig for my partner. Any suggestions?
Yeah. In that case, it really depends on, so what are the physical limitations? Does that mean that the person on the testosterone blockers is now no longer able to have sex or no longer wants to? They're two slightly different situations. If they're still able to, it can be a thing of spending time building up sex in a slower and, I guess, less conventional manner. So things like drawing from practices from tantric sex, which is an ancient Indian philosophy around how you blend sexuality with massage and meditation. It's quite a slow and deep and thorough process, but it's also incredibly uplifting. And when it's done well, it can be more profound. I think it's probably one of the most profound sex practices available. But because we are accustomed to sex being sort of hard and fast and big and robust.
And also one for you and one for me, you know.
Yes.
Like, so it might be in that situation that one partner doesn't have any sex drive because of the nature of their treatment in a traditional way, but they still really want to bring pleasure to their partner.
That's exactly right. So it's also about, yeah, recognizing who's giving and who's receiving in an erotic context, because it doesn't always have to be 50-50. You can make it, you know, if it's just one person who's doing the giving and the other one receiving and you both like it that way, that's okay. There's no rule about it being, it doesn't have to be 50-50.
The point being, it's about two humans still connecting.
Exactly. And you write your own rules.
I wonder who is telling that story too. I don't hear that story told very often. Here on Afternoons on ABC Radio Melbourne, it's 28 minutes past 1 o'clock. Our guest, Cindy Darnell, is a sex therapist, and we love having her in for a chat with you guys. Your questions often come through quite strongly on text in this segment because it can be difficult to talk about this stuff. I get it. What we also get are recommendations from one listener to the next. So we had Sad Mum in before asking, you know, how do I get him to get that I need a little more before I'm willing to go hooly-dooly, let's give it a crack. Joe in Ballarat says, hey, how about don't go out to dinner? Why don't you go fishing? Go to a car race. Date doesn't have to be dinner.
Absolutely.
And a movie. That's nice.
Really, really good point. Get creative. That's a really great suggestion.
Another comment from an anonymous texter. He says, we are a very lucky mature couple. We still enjoy sex. We both still have the hots for each other. So physical attraction is very important, as is treating each other with respect and keeping ourselves looking attractive for each other.
Great.
Cindy, it's wonderful having you in. I just wanted to share a little funny story with you from a friend. So they had this couple, they have children, they've gone to a great deal of effort to actually make sure the kids are in bed, and they didn't have much room or space or energy left for their sex life, but they were giving it a good old crack. So, you know, it took a while to get into, but they did eventually, and just before fireworks went off, in walked one of the children and saw what was going on, and the child is on the cusp of her own burgeoning sexuality and is now really traumatized. I think at some point we should talk about walking in on parents having sex, but also what that's like. How do you help kids early to get an understanding that sex is natural, or is it just unavoidable? They'll go through that awkward stage.
Look, I think going through the awkward stage is part of learning about it, because I guess it is, you know, it's surprising and slightly confronting when you find out that, you know, your parents do it and or maybe did it once. But it also is really dependent on how sexuality and sex conversations are managed at home. And a lot of clients that I see when I do make inquiries about how sex was handled in their homes growing up, some of them are like, yeah, you know, my parents would walk around nude after a shower, it was just not a big deal, or I would see them, you know, smooching in the kitchen, and that was really just part of how I learned about how human interaction is. And then others who are like, I never saw my parents touch each other ever in any way. So these things really make a huge difference to how children process sex and sexuality. But a little bit of awkwardness is perfectly fine. Just don't panic about it.
All right. Don't panic. It's organic. Cindy Darnell, sex therapist, thank you for coming in.
Oh, it's a pleasure, darling.
Teaching us a little more about how to put the spark in our bedroom. There's lots of free advice available on Cindy's website. It is cindydarnell.com, C-Y-N-D-I Darnell. NELL.com. And I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of your texts and calls. Popular as ever. Apparently it's something we all do. Most of us anyway.
Fancy that.
Thanks again, Cindy.
You're welcome.